Real Talk, the Customer Insight Show with Jen Mancusi, a top-rated live stream and podcast in the market research and insights industry. We stream live on LinkedIn, Twitter, and YouTube, and you can listen to us on all major podcast channels and watch on dbtv.tv. Join Jen and her guests for a weekly discussion around topics that will help you understand your customers better. Real Talk is presented to you by VoxPopMe, the leader in video research for over a decade. Here's today's conversation.
Hello, insights professionals, marketers, and everyone who wants to understand their customers better. I'm your host, Jen Mancusi. Who doesn't want customer loyalty? Of course, we all want customers to love our products, stay with us, and be positive brand promoters. In this episode, I want to discuss how the right market research strategies and teams can help drive loyalty. I'm joined by Greg Ambrose, a Toronto-based strategy, loyalty, and research professional, to discuss the topic. Welcome to the show, Greg.
Thanks, Jen. Great to be here.
Really good to have you here today. I'm excited because this topic has come up before in, you know, kind of different conversations. And in a previous episode with Rebecca Brooks, we discussed a decrease in customer loyalty. And, you know, even last week we were at the Quirks conference in Chicago and this topic came up about, there's so many choices for consumers to make in terms of switching brands. And what's your take on the state of customer loyalty today?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And obviously something that all organizations with or without loyalty programs are wrestling with. How do you drive that affinity? How do you, you know, acquire new, you know, deepen the engagement and make sure that you have a good retention strategy for them? And, you know, I agree with the overall premise. The switching costs are, you know, probably never been lower. It's easy to switch retailers, to switch brands, to switch service providers. And what we've seen over the last few years is companies have responded in different ways. And, you know, the ones that succeed are the ones that really invest and double down in that customer experience. The ones that get challenged are the ones that either put more restrictions on or kind of make it harder to switch. And you might see some short-term success, but I really think fundamentally what we're looking to do as loyalty professionals and research professionals is understand those consumer needs and focus on how do you engender that long-term emotional loyalty that will stick, because otherwise you're going to be chasing constantly.
That's super interesting. The sort of like focus on the experience versus the ones that are kind of like, you can't leave us. We're just going to hold you hostage here. Do you think that's like, there's differences for like different industries or different types of products? Because as you're describing that, I'm thinking about like cable providers and a lot of people switch to streaming services, which is very different from switching toothpaste brands, right?
Well, it's going to be different for every industry, to be sure. Because it's the frequency of engagement, right? Mm-hmm. Switching toothpaste brands, that might be every couple of weeks, depending how frequently you brush. Switching cable providers might be a once every couple of years decision, or if you're a cellular customer and you're locked into a 3 or 5 year plan, it will come up. And then depending on your last experience, then that's when you're going to like have those discussions, you know, internally or with others to say, you know, am I good here? What are my options? Who's chasing me? What have been my last few experiences with my current provider? And do I really feel loyal to them? And like, I spend a lot of time thinking about the idea of loyalty and is it transactional or is it emotional? And what are those brands I truly love and want to engage with and feel good about doing business with versus what are the ones that are convenient? What are the ones that, you know, I'm going to visit frequently for reasons other than a deep affinity for that brand? You know, I may have a transactional relationship. That doesn't mean I'm an advocate. And so how do you get people along that journey to really engage with your product or service so that you're building that longer term retention and have that ability to engage deeper with them over time?
Absolutely. And so, you know, now my next question is, how do you know if you have that transactional relationship with your customers or the emotional or that affinity? And really, like, where does research play a role in kind of identifying where your current state of loyalty with your customers.
Sure. I mean, research plays a critical role. Otherwise, we wouldn't be having this conversation. But, you know, it is about understanding every customer you have, even some of the non-customers. Why do they engage with you? Why don't they engage with you? How's their frequency changing? What are their motivations, need states, attitudes, behaviors, however you might define it? It is critical to sort of make sure that you've got that ongoing pulse and you're being proactive with your information gathering. So, you know, the successful programs, the successful products that I see are ones that really tap into a particular need or a particular being, or are able to communicate in the right way. A couple of years ago, when I was at Cineplex, which is a Canadian movie chain, theater chain, we launched a subscription program, and we had sort of scanned around and looked at different examples of programs globally, and, you know, had some ideas of where we would go with this, but fundamentally it came down to talking to our potential members. And we learned some interesting things, in particular that less could be more. And we had a bias initially to say, well, let's load in some more stuff to this program to say, well, you get 10% off here, 20% off here, you get a free thing this month, you get, you know, a bonus coupon when you do this, whatever it might be. And we figured the more we put into this program, the more compelling it would be. Whereas it was kind of the reverse. What consumers or potential members told us is, I get it, just these three things and you've signed me up. If you start putting all this other stuff in, then I'm going to ask you to take it away and give me a cheaper price because they feel like they're paying stuff they don't really want for. So that was a great example in my mind of saying, understand the need state, understand the guest, and then tailor your programs or customers' offerings towards that.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Something you said, I kind of want to dig into a little bit. You said, you know, it's important that the research be ongoing and proactive information gathering. Like, what do you mean by that? What does it look like to be proactive versus reactive in your research?
So it's a little bit of two things. One is preempting the questions that you think your business might have. And you know, we can get into that a little bit more, but the only way you're going to do that as a research professional, as a research team, is if you fundamentally understand the nature of your business, what matters to the people and senior leaders across your business, and where the business is going. So, you know, being able to be ahead of some of that so that when you get asked questions as a research team, you're already on your way to capturing that information, or you have a reasonably confident assessment of how you would do it. The second thing is to make sure you're current. I've seen this a lot recently with some stuff that I've been working on, and, you know, information can quickly get out of date. And the world is changing fast, obviously. Strat plans and information that might have been current 6 months ago, 2 years ago, 4 years ago, whatever it might be, less relevant now, not a surprise. And so how do you make sure that you've got that ongoing pulse? What I think is important is to recognize when directional is good enough and when a perfectly, you know, confident answer is needed. And it's kind of a combination of both of those, because sometimes you can get directional information or a comparable read, which allows you to understand, yeah, this is where it's going, right? And then if it starts to behave in a certain way and you're in there, it sends up, you know, warning signs or, you know, sends you down a different path, then you can adjust. But keeping an ongoing pulse is critical as we move forward.
Yeah, it really allows you to be more flexible with what's directional versus a specific concrete answer, because you know you're continuing to research it, right? It's more iterative. Is there any kind of guidance that you have around, like, hey, this is an answer that you definitely need it to be right? Like, don't mess up on this answer versus, hey, here's some examples of stuff that can be more directional, or you kind of have to feel it in the moment.
It's context dependent, like you just said, right? It is, you know, the level of investment will be important. The business importance will have to be taken into consideration. The ease of getting the information is also you know, something that as a research team or a research professional, you have to consider and say, okay, how quickly can I get this? Can I get a directional read through one particular channel that will then inform me and say, no, I actually need to dig into this more, or no, I think we're good. And you can socialize those results or that information and then move on as a business. So to your point, you have to be kind of in the moment. You have to have that open mind to say, you know, for this particular situation at this time with these conditions, what do I need? What's our best way to support this ask or this information need?
Yeah, absolutely. That makes a lot of sense. Now, you mentioned talking to customers, but also talking to non-customers. Sure. What do you think is the right mix of talking to customers that you've identified as loyal, customers that are maybe have churned, or those that maybe are in the transactional bucket, or non-customer? Like, what's the right mix to talk to those different segments and groups?
Again, and you know, I'll probably use this answer a lot. It depends, right? I think it's important to talk to all. You need to understand the holistic view. It might depend on where you are in the life cycle of a product or a program or a service. You know, if you've got a significant base that you're looking to deepen their engagement and retain, then you're going to want to spend more time talking to your current customers. If it's a new product launch or it's a recent launch that where you just have some early adopters, then you're going to want to understand who they are, find lookalikes in the rest of your customer base or the general population, and start talking to them to understand, well, why haven't you joined, or why haven't you purchased, or why haven't you subscribed? So again, it's just, and I can't say this often enough, it really matters on what you are looking to accomplish, but making sure that you have that open mind. And it's as important to be, you know, broad in your assessment of who you're talking to, but also flexible in how you speak with them. Some of it might be direct one-on-one conversations or shadowing or observation. Some of it might be, you know, online, digital, you know, social media listening and scanning. You know, if I think back to when I started in research, the number of techniques or tools has exploded. But some of the ones that were, you know, tried and true are still incredibly relevant. And so it's finding that balance and making sure that your team or yourself is comfortable, you know, recommending or leveraging those appropriate tools for the situation at hand.
Yeah. And I think that's the key, right? As you mentioned, like, it's important to understand the objective first. And I think this is where see people get tripped up sometimes is in, you know, choosing the methodology first for the sake of the methodology, as opposed to, you know, because it's a new technique or it's a shiny new tool, or how can we use AI and ChatGPT or whatever, right? As opposed to saying, this is the best tool or best methodology to meet this objective that we've already defined, sure. Which is, you know, is tough. As you said, all of those techniques have really exploded. There's so many more ways to capture feedback today than there were not long ago. All right. So let's shift the discussion a little bit to building the right market research teams to inform those decisions. What skills do you look for when you're building a team of researchers for specifically around thinking about customer loyalty?
Right. So there's definite hard skills that, you know, would be required and would be a good mix for a team, whether it's qualitative or quantitative, whether it's comfort with online tools, whether it is good interviewing skills, whatever it might be. But I think if I, you know, sort of turn that question a little bit and understand what are the traits I'm looking for in people, it really comes down to, you know, being curious, being inquisitive about the work at hand, right? So making sure that you're comfortable with what you are, you know, being asked to look at, that you have an open mind, you are not a order taker, you know, and I don't mean any of this, I don't mean dismissively, but it's about making sure that you are continually pushing and asking why, right? I mean, there's all sorts of tools, techniques, cliches, whatever you might refer to them. You know, if you ask why seven times, you eventually get to the root cause. But it's individuals who genuinely are interested in what the challenges are and focused on making sure that, you know, you're really understanding the nature of the solution or the issue at hand. Secondly, I look for people who are or can be or have the desire to be good communicators. It is critical to, as a research team or as a research professional, to make sure that you're able to get your point across. Now, it might sound trite, but that could be verbal, it could be written, it could be visual. But the ability to make sure that you are communicating, that you are being engaged with your audience, that you demonstrate that commitment to the cause, and you're able to help them understand. You know, I've been in many meetings, and I'm sure all of us have, where research findings are being presented, and it takes two or three people to actually get at what the outcome is. Right? So somebody will present it, and then another person will say, well, what you're trying to say is I think you're saying this, and then it gets to there, and then somebody else jumps in and builds upon it. And we've all played all these different roles. So the more we can, you know, distill information down to digestible and, you know, sort of actionable elements, you know, it improves efficiency, expedience, and just sort of sets us on our way. The final one, which is, you know, complementary to the other two, is passion, right? You want people who care. Now, when you ask this question about building a research team, my mind automatically goes to what I'll call in-house or client-side research teams. And in that case, you're talking about people who are passionate for their business, who are passionate with their team members, and who can deliver and convey the excitement they have and the interest they have in what they're doing and what their business is doing. But it's equally applicable on the agency side or the sole contributor consultancy side. You have to demonstrate that you are excited about the work you're doing. And that might sound funny in certain cases, but it goes a long way in building those relationships, fostering trust, getting people to feel like you're on their side. And, you know, we all have clients, whether we are agencies dealing with end user clients or whether we are internal teams dealing with clients who are on, you know, other parts of the organization. So, again, that those elements of curiosity, communication, and passion are traits that I think can go a long way towards, you know, building a successful research team.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that it's really interesting to me to hear you describe the communication piece specifically, because I think a lot of times in the industry, we talk about storytelling. Yep. And it's important to be a good storyteller, but being a good communicator is actually like that very, you know, minor difference in semantics there is actually a huge difference. Like being a good storyteller isn't necessarily being a good communicator, and having that sort of clear outcome as a result of what you've learned in the research is maybe a slightly different tweak on that.
Yeah, I think so. So where I would build on that is understand the types of stories you're trying to tell. And I have been fortunate to be in rooms with pretty senior leaders, and they would tell you or me, they don't want stories. They want the answer. They want, you know, cut to the chase. Don't take me on a journey. But that's a different type of storytelling. That is a little more concise, you know, maybe a haiku or a limerick, but you're basically just getting to the point quickly. You're not giving them some Homeric ode that will take them on a journey. And so, again, it comes back in that case to knowing your audience, making sure that you understand what other people are looking to get out of interactions, level setting, having those conversations up front. There's so much that we can do as insights professionals to set ourselves up and our teams up for success.
Yeah, absolutely. We need poets, not novelists, right? Right.
Yeah, and to a degree, right? I mean, you have to, again, find your audience and make sure that you're tailoring your communication accordingly.
For sure, for sure. And I think as a whole, what I love hearing about, you know, all of the researchers I've spoken to in my career, like everybody kind of comes from different backgrounds. You've got sociologists, you've got marketers, you've got, and those soft skills that you describe can come kind of from any of those different backgrounds. It's more uncommon that people like went to school for market research to study research and become a researcher. It's there, but not as frequent. People kind of come from all different backgrounds, which is one of the things I love about this industry. But that curiosity and that those communication skills and that passion can really come from anywhere, which is really cool.
Yeah. And so when I've been hiring or when I've been, you know, looking for people to work with as well, I think having a background in market research is great. You learn a lot. You can, you know, rely on people who have got those skills. Mm-hmm. I will also be drawn to people who have liberal arts degrees, like you said, whether it's political science, sociology, history. Yours truly has a philosophy degree. It's about, again, understanding different ways of telling stories and forming arguments. But it also doesn't have to come from your education. You could just be a traveler. You could be somebody who likes to read. You could be somebody who likes to cook. You could be really into music. It's about using what you're passionate about and finding ways to translate that into professional success. And it may not be obvious to you or to one as you're looking at it, but there's a lot that goes into it. We are all generally fairly interesting people, and you know, tapping into some of that can make us better, make us more compelling, you know, communicate that passion, you know, create that idea of ourselves as something beyond you know, somebody who fields a tracking survey and tells you what the market share results are.
Right. Totally. So thinking about that from an individual perspective, how do you think about building a well-rounded team then? You know, are there like gaps that each other needs to fill to create something that works well together?
Yeah. I mean, I think for 90% of the cases, I'd have to probably say it's even more. It's less about you're frequently not going to be building a team from scratch. You're either going to be inheriting a team or working with an existing team, whatever it might be. And you'll have people come and go, you know, as they do. And really, as long as you've got a foundational spirit of collaboration and you feel like you can bring in diversity, different viewpoints, different, you know, experience levels, different frames of reference, it's very valuable. Now, but you don't, in my mind anyway, you don't set out to say, I got to find somebody who has a history degree, or I've got to find somebody who is 25 because I got a bunch of 40-year-olds. Like it's you'll know as you go. And I think if you're instilling a spirit of collaboration and learning and you work with the team to share those ideas, right? To build upon each other's thoughts, to get to a better place. I think that will come natural. A lot of it will start from the tone that you set. If you're the leader of a team, to be proactive, to embody those ideas of curiosity, passion, and communication, to make sure that you're living those and you're demonstrating that in the organization or to your clients. But I think it is, you know, bringing those people together and having them be open and, you know, comfortable with collaboration is critical.
Yeah, I think you're totally right, because if you really want to be able to share unique experience or diverse perspectives, that collaboration has to be there. The best people that I work with are ones where, you know, there's no pride of ownership and there's no ego and we're just like learning from each other, which can be hard, especially if you have a team of passionate people, right?
Sure.
So sometimes those things don't line up, but that spirit of collaboration at the end of the day, you know, really allows for people to learn from each other and like the entire team gets better as a result.
Yep.
Totally. And so, you know, and then thinking about those skill sets on that team, market research teams can always use more help. Nobody's got enough resources or time or, you know, budget and things like that. What tips can you offer to, you know, help to level up a team, whether those are resources or just things to think about, teams of any size, really, to really level them up?
Sure. And I think I've had the opportunity to share some of this before with others, but it's really about, you know, stop thinking in silos, understanding the business you're in, partnering with people who want to partner with you, find your champions in an organization, you know, understand what you can deliver and tie those to business opportunities, business results, KPIs within the organization. We're all facing, you know, restrictions, diminished resources, looking to do things in a quicker, easier, cheaper way, which is, you know, natural. But in order to grow a business, you usually need to invest in it. And investing in customer information is critical. So how do you make sure that you are being seen as caring and being a responsible steward about for the business, and the investments you're making are directly tied to optimal business outcomes? So the only way you're going to know that is if you communicate and talk, demonstrate that passion, and show that curiosity. You know, it's about finding the path of lesser resistance to achieving your goals as a team. And you can run into a lot of people who will be resistant and hesitant, who will, you know, put things off. But being persistent towards that goal will ultimately put you in as good a position as you can be. Now, will you succeed all the time? No. But you want to make sure that you're being seen as, you know, asking for the right reason, right? Because the people who hold the purses are getting asked by everybody. And how do you make sure that you're connecting your asks to outcomes and solutions versus asking just because? And I know nobody does that, but that's the risk of how it could be interpreted. So again, driving that connection to business outcomes is critical.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that broader kind of more strategic business thinking is really key. And you can see a big difference with the insights leaders that do a really good job of this and really are kind of fighting for the value of research internally. And mm-hmm. You know, I love that you said, like, kind of find champions, maybe in other divisions within the business, because insights professionals, we can use all the help we can get, right? Of people for saying, sure. Hey, this is really valuable. And really, I think there are some teams out there who don't necessarily know what their, you know, teammates over in the marketing team or the product team are doing with the data that they've given them. And so creating those relationships and that communication across functions is really critical to being able to say, this is the value that we're bringing to the business. This is how these teams are using this information. Here's the money we saved, or here's the money we made, or whatever. But it does take a few extra steps to get to that information. And that's really maybe the harder part.
Yeah, it you can use, you know, recency examples to say, look, this is what we did, and here's what we delivered, and here's how this benefited the overall business. I think going back to something you just mentioned too about, you know, sharing and fostering that spirit within your team, I think as a leader, your best opportunity is to be transparent with your team, give them opportunities, you know, make sure that there's multiple points of connection. You don't want to be a pure funnel into the resources that you are managing. You need to make sure that your team is engaging and reaching out and making those connections. So I think I couldn't agree more. It's about driving that spirit of business value and making sure that those insights teams are seen as, you know, essential parts of the organization, not just for the information they provide, but for the ideas they generate.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I just had a thought that about a month ago, I heard from Kelsey Salisbury. There's a little shout out to her. She's with Johnson & Johnson. And she talked about the way that she builds connections cross-functionally across the marketing teams and some other teams is she raised her hand for the insights department to own new employee onboarding.
Wow. Okay.
And which I thought was very unique and something I had never heard of before. And I thought, this is brilliant, right? Like, build the relationships with people as they're coming into the organization. And the way she described it, she's like, nobody's going to say no when you want to help with onboarding. Everybody wants somebody else to do the onboarding, right? And it is a way for her to ensure that insights is at the core of what all new employees are thinking about. And also you've built the relationships with these people that you can have that open communication and collaboration going forward. And so there's so many like unique ways to approach it, but ultimately with the goal of, you know, the way you described it, I wrote it down, investing in customer information. You want all the teams to be doing that, not just the research team. And so any creative ways you can build those relationships with those cross-functional teams is really critical.
Yeah, no, I think that's a brilliant idea. And it's given me ideas too, right? Just, like, well, because you're right that, you know, onboarding is critical for every organization. They want to bring people in, get them up to speed as quickly as possible, and make sure that they're adding value to the business. That's why they're there. And as an insights team, you know, you can say, you know, we can educate new hires as to the competitive landscape, as to how our business is performing in the market, as to what are the trends that are happening that they should be aware of. You could tailor it depending on the level and depending on the type of work that the person's doing. But I think that's a, you know, yes, you're accomplishing sort of the selfish goals of making connections and making sure that people like you. And I'm not being dismissive of that at all. I think it's really fantastic. But there's a tremendous benefit to the onboarding process to educate and to say, here's what we're doing. And it would also be a great opportunity to give some of your more junior insights people a chance to play that role and be teachers or educators or provide that value to people who potentially are more senior than them in the organization. And that's, so I think that's wonderful. And I'd love to, you know, I'll continue to think about that for sure.
Yeah, totally. It's a great way to kind of foster a customer-centric culture, right? Just making sure that that information is at the core of what everybody's doing and thinking about.
For sure. So,
awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show today. This was a great conversation. We covered a lot of topics. So I can't thank you enough. This is great.
Yeah, this is great, Jen. Really, thanks for having me and good luck with, you know, going forward, and have a great day.
Awesome. Thank you. Thanks everyone for joining us today. We'll return with another episode soon. I'll be speaking with Monica Aguillo of Manscaped. We'll see you then.